From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're talking with Derek Anderson about the endowment. Anderson is the host of a long-running community affairs show here in Wilmington, first on radio and now on Facebook. And we've been talking about this issue for a long time. That includes a show we did last year that was before the rebrand from New Hanover Community Endowment, and dating all the way back to one of the first times I met Anderson when I went on his radio show in 2020 to talk about the sale of New Hanover Regional Medical Center, which of course led to the endowment. On today's show, we'll get into the departure of the endowment's second CEO, that's the second in 2 years, and some of their grant decisions, as well as the lack of transparency around their board and how politics plays a role and where the foundation could go next. All right, well, Derek Anderson, thank you so much for being here.
Good to be here, man. Good to be back with you and good to be downtown where it's 200 degrees, but, you know, we...
It's only 150 in the shade.
But, you know, I love downtown.
Yeah. So you've been talking a lot on Facebook and to folks on your show about the endowment. You and I have been talking about this. The community's been talking about this for a long time.
Long time.
And it's been a couple of weeks, but we are now looking at an endowment that has lost its second CEO. And people have been saying second CEO in 4 or 5 years, but really it's second CEO in 2 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we had William Buster, mm-hmm. who was brought in as the original CEO, mm-hmm. and he made it about a year and a half, left. We never really got total clarity on why he left. We've heard lots of theories, and we could talk about that. And then his replacement, very different kind of person, William Buster, black gentleman, spent a lot of time working in philanthropy.
Right.
Had worked in Mississippi, had worked in Kalamazoo, had worked at Dogwood, mm-hmm. and had done a lot of this work.
Mm-hmm.
His replacement, Dan Winslow, white gentleman, Republican, but Massachusetts Republican, so like pro-gay marriage, drove an electric car, but
right.
so that kind of Republican,
yeah.
if that makes any sense in the South. But no experience in philanthropy, lots of experience in the legal world. He'd put together a legal team for a private firm. He'd run a sort of libertarian think tank and policy group up in the Northeast, but hadn't worked in philanthropy. So it seemed like, okay, if William Buster didn't work for the endowment, let's try something that's different in almost every way. Less than a year later, Winslow's gone.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to ask, what were you hearing in the community that, I think it was like a Monday morning when that announcement came?
Yeah. And look, I'll be glad to convey what I was hearing. I was hearing that on the board, there are people close to the, I won't say how close, but close enough that what they have relayed to me some of the happenings have been true. So the confidence is there that there were some tensions going on. When they fired Buster, and let me say one thing about Mr. Buster before we go on. I worked with him when he was an intern with the Black Farmers, trying to get the Black Farmers organized, and he was a young intern out of A&T. So that goes back to like 1996. When he was a young kid, and he remembered when he came here, working on that with Mr. John Boyd and a guy out of Regalwood, a young man I can't remember right now, working with the Black Farmers. And he was very, very smart, very able young kid at that time. And so when I heard that he was going to be the new CEO, and I heard that he went with Dogwood and some other nonprofits, so I said, good choice, wise choice. But anyway, I heard there were some tensions on the board with Mr. Winslow. And I never met Mr. Winslow in my life. I heard that he would, even before he came, there was a rumor that he would come. And I think I had a friend named Ben Schock when I said, I'm hearing his name. Don't know who he is. Of course, you can Google and find out just about anything and say, okay, he's Providence. You mentioned some of the things that he had done in the past as far as his background and resume is concerned. I'm like this, Brother Ben. I'll give anybody a chance. Just show me, and then I'll In fact, I haven't even had a chance, really, to size up Mr. Winslow. He's gone.
It's been less than a year.
So really, if I came in and judged how he was doing, but the things I did hear about Mr. Winslow were positive. I heard from people who were just as cynical and skeptical as I am about the board that, hey, this guy, he's trying to do, you know, he's saying the right things anyway. So what I did hear about him was promising, trying to open it up, trying to incorporate some of the nonprofits that are not well known. But when he was like everybody else, I'm like, what? He's gone? You know, like you said on that Monday morning, that I didn't know he was. I heard about the tensions and the different differences of opinions that he had with some members of the board. But I didn't, okay, that happens with boards. I've been on boards. So I know that can definitely happen, but I didn't expect the immediate dismissal of, I already left. You know, people always like to say, well, it's family and friends. Well, I know what that means. That's code for we don't want to tell you why he's leaving.
Right. I mean, you and I were talking off mics, but we both watched a long-form interview with WECT's Fran Weller, spoke to board chair Shannon Winslow and Sophie Desjardins, she's the interim CEO right now. She was the VP. And they worked through a lot of different things. And Fran Weller put it to them, you know, not only was this a prestigious gig, the endowment is a very large, $1.6 billion.
It's the largest in the country.
I think it might be the case, yeah, that it is the largest publicly owned hospital that's been converted to a foundation. In any case, it is notably large, a very, very large foundation that's been created from the sale of the hospital. It has the potential to do incredible stuff. So being at the helm of it is a prestigious gig.
Right.
But she just cut right to the chase and was like, this is also an incredibly well-paid gig.
Yeah, she's your style of interview. That type of 60 minutes.
I learned a lot from Fran, for sure. But, I mean, the point is, you know, Buster was making somewhere north of $400,000 a year, and Dan Winslow was making somewhere in the $300,000. Very generous compensation packages. And people don't usually walk away from them, and especially with Winslow, not only did he walk away after less than a year, but whatever the endowment says, I have to believe it was somewhat abrupt because they had to sort of punt the announcement to a PR firm out of Raleigh, Echel and Vaughn. And Sophie Desjardins, who was the interim CEO, was on vacation in Europe. You know, so I guess whatever happened, and I don't claim to have any special knowledge about what exactly happened, but whatever happened, happened so quickly that they couldn't wait for Desjardins to get back from Europe.
And what I heard was the tensions were getting heightened. And like I said, that's not unusual for boards. I didn't know how acute that situation was. I thought, what else is new? And the person who's really close to it said, no, man, this thing is getting to the point where we don't know. And then before I could really, and I told you off air, and I'll tell you now, I didn't even have time to size up this guy. The little bit I heard was positive, so If you go back to my shows or if you go back to my posts, I had nothing negative to say about Mr. Winslow because it wasn't time to evaluate and assess what he was doing. It just wasn't that much time. You got to give people time. And so the firing, for lack of a better phrase, I'll use that term, until the board calls me in and say, okay, prove me wrong, came as a surprise to me like it did everybody else. I think when you look at the board, the makeup of the board, and that's what I tend to do, who's the dominant people or person on the board and why these things are happening and what are their priorities and how they look at things. I see people on the board who aren't that community-minded as far as trying to bring as many people in as they can. They work at a network. It's a good old boy network. I'm not ashamed to say that. That cater to only they might here and there do some things. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. When they give money to Cape Fear or UNCW, I'm for that. And I'm for that because we do need, you know, I just conveyed to you, I'm in the health care system.
Right. So you're talking about this, it's over $20 million
grant
to help create a nursing pipeline.
Right. I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Now, I think that's a lot of money, but, I know that's a lot of money, but I don't mind that as much as I do when you see the lesser 501Cs, when you see the little organizations get turned down. And then you look at the makeup of who's on these the UNCW. You know, got a lot of clout. CFCC got a lot of clout. They got some of the big wheels, the big boys on their boards, on their trustee boards. And so when you look at that in total, and then look who's trying their best to get nearly not as much money as these groups are getting. You look at GLOW. GLOW has a if you look at the board of GLOW, they've got a very prestigious, some very prestigious members on their board.
Oh, yeah.
And they get pretty well funded by that.
Yeah.
Now, in turn, you look at other lesser known entities that apply, and they get turned down. And we can go down the list.
Right.
We don't need to enumerate them because there are so many.
I take your point. I mean, when I first heard about the Nursing Pipeline Grant, as it was kind of coming together before it was announced, it was my sense that it was, at least in part, the brainchild of Brian Eckel, who has a local development company, also sits on the board of Novant,
mm-hmm.
and he had been on the partnership advisory group that helped steer the hospital sale. Smart guy, kind of well-connected. He knows lots of the power players in town, and he saw a problem, and he made some phone calls, and he got Aswani Valetti from UNCW and Jim Morton from CFCC and maybe Michael Lee, who's on the Appropriations Committee in the State Senate, and put together a package and kind of brought it to the endowment. This wasn't something the endowment came up with.
Mm-hmm.
This was brought to them, and it was the biggest single grant they've done to date. And, again, I know there were a lot of people. Harper Peterson was critical of this. A lot of people saw, lots of money go into big institutions, and they've been critical. I thought it was a good idea. I thought it served a real purpose. I think it'll bear real benefits, and it's got the kind of long view that the endowment should have, that they say they want to have, this sort of long-term transformational change. We're investing some now, and we'll see big dividends down the road.
Right.
What struck me a little bit was that, you look at the total financial horsepower for what they're putting out in a year, there was still plenty of room to do, $5 million for Good Shepherd or $10 million for Universal Pre-K. I don't think it would cost anywhere near that much, but there were a lot of other big ideas on the table, including big ideas that are in the endowment's charter, like their founding documents. There are suggestions, but there's lots of ideas in there. They could have picked two or three other big ones and done that as well, but I don't know who was going to take up the mantle, to your point, right? Like, who had those connections mm-hmm. and knew the right people to call to get a meeting with the endowment and say, hey, this is a good idea, you should do it.
And I'm glad we can segue into that from what you just said. Because I heard that, again, from pretty sources that I've laid on in the past, that Mr. Winslow was trying to do some of that. He was trying to bring these groups that maybe didn't have that clout that you just referred to come and bring a proposal to that inside connection and have that kind of clout that they could ascertain funds. And so that what he was trying to do was trying to say, okay, let's open it up. I even heard he made personal visits to people who were members of these lesser-known foundations.
He went to a lot of, I can attest, he went to a lot of living rooms, sat on a lot of porches. I mean, whatever else you think about him and his performance, he put a lot of miles on those shoes.
Yeah. And so that even, that when I heard things like that, I'm saying, okay, I know who's on that board. I know every member on. Now, I might not know them as well as I know others, but I know certain members of that board that I don't have a proclivity to like serving the whole community. That's just their nature. And so when you look at that, I could see where the conflict would arise. When I heard there was tensions on the board, that didn't enter my mind until I heard that he was trying to outreach to groups who may have thought they might have gotten a fair shake, and he was trying to say, okay, look, I'm here. I'm going to try my best to be fair, to adjudicate these funds fairly. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things there. One is I've heard that there is still, for some members of the board, I can't speak for them all, a little bit of hesitancy to make mistakes, to swing big and miss. And, you know, there are still a lot of people on that board who were either the first appointees or were involved in the creation of the endowment.
The PEG.
In general, the PEG. Yeah. But people who have a real vested interest in the way this thing was put together, and they don't want to be the first people to screw up. And I do kind of get that. But I feel like along with that comes a hesitancy to take a chance on maybe a lesser-known nonprofit. I mean, if I know if I'm on that board, if I give $5 million to Coastal Horizons, then Margaret Weller Stargell is going to be able to put that money to good use. It's not going to really be an issue.
Right, exactly. She's a professional. She's good. She's
been doing it for a minute. Not that long.
She's very
Margaret,
good.
Not that long. But she's a professional.
Absolutely. She's the cream of the crop. I mean, you basically know you're going to get the best, you know.
Yeah, and they're going to fill out all the forms and the documentations, and they're going to account for what they spend and report. But you're not really worried. And I think there's some hesitancy to take a bet on either individual small groups or maybe a bunch of groups working together. That's less tested. It's riskier. So I think that's one part of it. There's a touchier part of it, and I don't want to avoid this. There was something Dan Winslow said last December at the endowment meeting that kind of surprised me that he said it so directly. And there was a number of speakers who put it to him in various ways about what he was going to do about racial inequality, economic inequality, the lasting damage to Wilmington's middle class done by the 1898 coup and massacre. Really tough questions, right? And I've heard some mealy-mouthed responses to those questions in the past. And he said, we can rebuild the black middle class. Why wouldn't we do that? You know, like, that's an important thing. Like, that was just, he talked about learning about 1898 and how shocked and horrified he was and about how he thought that that was something the endowment could do, rebuild the black middle class in Wilmington. And I hadn't heard that many people be that direct about spending, and this is the public's money.
Yeah, black people pay taxes too, you know.
Yeah. But about, spending the public
contrary
money.
Contrary to popular belief. Yeah. Well, not popular belief, but some belief.
Some people's belief.
Yeah, some people believe that.
And I certainly heard, I saw in the comment section, ECT, Port City Daily, WHQR, WWAY, there was a contingent of people who said, you know, we don't want the endowment to be reparations. We don't want the endowment to be a slush fund for, you know, social safety net programs.
Yeah.
And I have sensed there's some of that on the board. I can't speak to what extent it's permeated the board.
I heard that was on the board from people who are close to the board.
Yeah.
Real close.
I feel like it is a public debate, and I feel like the code for that is the endowment is for everybody. The endowment for all citizens of New Hanover County, as opposed to a program that might benefit the neediest. And I think Winslow was getting increasingly candid about this when I would put this question to him. He would say, I'm paraphrasing here, so it's not a direct quote, but he would say things like, yes, the endowment is for all residents of New Hanover County, but the neediest people, right? The most, people who are most marginalized, people with the most needs, are going to need the most resources, which means the most money. And I think he said it. And the first time he said it, I was kind of surprised. And then the next time I was like, oh, this is the party line. I was like, all right, that seems fair. And I feel like that was part of the tension. I can't prove it, but I feel like it.
Well, I've been told that's part of the tension. See, and like I said, people who have conveyed to me in confidence what's been happening with the meetings, because unfortunately the meetings aren't public. I don't even understand. That's another issue, but it's public fund. You know, I always thought if you have public funds, then it's public money, and it should be public meetings. But that's another story. But what was conveyed to me was that you hit it. I mean, you know, you hit it, Ben. That there was that tension of the outreach, and it not necessarily a racial outreach, although that was a component of it. But an outreach to groups heretofore who were community-minded, who were trying to do things within the incorporate sectors of the community, Remember, let's talk about something recent when they rescinded the money allocated to the Northside grocery. $6.7 million to be accurate. Well, that money was put there in good faith. That might have even been before Winslow got here, I think. But it was allocated to try to seed money to get a grocery going, which would have been pretty good for the Northside. Then they rescinded it. And it fell in line with what the county commissioners were doing when they had their budget cuts. It all seemed to fall in line with a typical theme that was going on between the county and some members of that endowment board to take back any kind of social activity in the community.
Yeah, the Northside Co-op, many people and organizations have been promising the Northside a grocery store. The city of Wilmington, I believe, has promised. New Hanover Regional Medical Center promised it. And I feel like they, the powers that be, have betrayed the Northside a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure there were exigencies and reasons why those past proposals didn't come to fruition, but that's a sentiment I've heard on the Northside. And I think at a certain point, the county started getting cold feet about what they were actually doing. Because if you look at it as a business model, that's not going to be successful as a grocery store. Otherwise, someone would have built a grocery store.
Right, right, yeah.
And so there was always going to be some form of subsidization. And the co-op model part of it always seemed like it was more of a kind of a symbolic buy-in, more than that was ever going to be a part of the financial success of it. And so it seemed like someone was going to have to subsidize this, or there was going to have to be a massive campaign to get people to change their shopping habits, you know, to go out of their way and not go to their local Harris Teeter or their local Publix and instead go downtown to the north side of Wilmington and go to the co-op. And I don't think that's impossible, but I think that certainly would have been and will be a lot of work if they continued to pursue that model. And so at the very least, it would take some kind of, you know, marketing and goodwill campaign. All of that to say, just based on the merits of the markets and the demographics, I didn't see a grocery store there working, and I think the county was thinking about that. They were looking at what are we actually doing here, and then when they got the land donation from the city, that spot on, I think it's Farrington,
mm-hmm.
Is not great for foot traffic. And mm-hmm. There are other buildings that I've looked at, just walking around the north side and sort of the greater downtown Wilmington area. You know, I think that Coca-Cola building that's in what they're calling the Soda Pop District.
Soda Pop District, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, I think there were other bigger places with other stuff around it that could have drawn more foot traffic, but that's not the property they got. So I think the county was hoping the endowment would pick it up, and then the endowment kind of realized that this could turn into, it was going to go from something that was a popular project that was going to generate, that the general public kind of seemed to like, and it was going to generate a lot of goodwill in the north side and the black community, but that at a certain point it was not going to continue to work without their support. And they were going to either be in the situation where they're going to have to keep funding it and get increasing public pushback from people who aren't in the north side, or let it fail. And both of those were pretty bad optics. Another one of those.
Yeah. You know, to deal with the north side co-op, I think it could have worked. I think it could have turned a profit. I don't know, and I'd have to see what the exact business model was for it. I know there is a food desert over there.
Yeah.
And so, and look, there are people that are at work, make money, but they have to go outside the community to buy what they need. So I think it could have been self-sustaining. I don't really understand the pullout of or rescinding the funds without really doing a study and coming before the public and being as articulate in the explanation as you've just been and saying, hey, here's what's happening, folks. Here's what we're looking. And then trying to say, well, they're bringing a Publix downtown, which is a terrible off-ramp because they're two different markets.
Very different markets.
The folks that go to the Northside Co-op aren't going to Publix, trust me.
Yeah, I hear you. And I have heard from people in the nonprofit and philanthropic world around the country that rescinding the grant and the way it happened shocked people. You know, I heard from one guy who works on this. This is all he does, is consults philanthropic foundations. And he said, the fact that people found out about this retraction, the general public found out about this, by accident, because a county commissioner let it slip, And then the county manager was kind of scrambling to be like, oh, I don't know if everyone knows about that yet. That is a terrible way for the public to find out, because if the endowment came out and said, yeah, held a public meeting, you know, said, invite the press in, invite the public in and say, look, we got bad news. This isn't going to work, right? But we're committed to this. We're going to find a new location. We're going to find a new model. We are taking the money back, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because the money earns interest when it's here. And so we're taking it back. We're putting it back in the corpus. It's going to earn interest. But we remain committed to this. We're keeping the team on board. We're going to float like $100,000 to keep that part of it going. We're going to do studies. We're going to, you know, we're going to pivot. And you're hearing it from us first. And we're disappointed we couldn't make this happen, but we're still working on it. That'd be so much better than me hearing it from Commissioner Leanne Pierce.
Yeah, yeah.
As an aside. Like, that's...
Yeah. That was rather undiplomatic, I would say.
Undiplomatic is nice. but I'll say, you know, to that end, it is a food desert. That is one of the core things that's identified in the asset purchase agreement. That's the founding documents of the endowment, is to deal with food deserts. I hope that they will still remain committed to that. Some of the pushback I started to hear was along those, is this the endowment for some or the endowment for all kind of arguments. I also think the endowment didn't really think about how this fit into the bigger picture. Because on top of everything else I've already said, I've also heard from folks in the bottom, mm-hmm. on the south side, mm-hmm. who are like, you know.
What about us?
What about us?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a fair question. There's other deserts, other food deserts around the county. There's, you know, and I don't think, it didn't feel to me like it was part of a holistic plan where the endowment came out. This is what I'm trying to say. It didn't feel like the endowment had said, we've studied food deserts. We understand the issue. There are 4 or 5 in the county. We're going to do this as a pilot program to see what works, and then we're going to expand and address all of these. It didn't feel like it was part of a big cohesive strategy. It just felt like, here's a thing we could do, mm-hmm. without a ton of strategy around it.
Yeah. And once you commit to a amount of money that large, people, because they even went so far, they had architects. You went to some of the meetings when they had the virtual architectural layout of the place.
It's heartbreaking in retrospect.
Yeah. I mean, and people were there. There was buoyancy in the audience, and everybody was happy that it was coming. And then to just like pull the rug out on it, you don't give people enough credit. If you come before the people and say, here's what's happening, folks, let's be honest with you. They have the capability to understand that. You know, it might not like it.
Will be a few loud people who will make your life hell for a little bit.
There's nothing you can do about that. Yeah. But for the most part, but here's what we are going to do. You you do it at your own peril. You take back and no explanation. Okay, we're taking it back. Well, what are we going to do? Why did you make this commitment in the first place? What changed? You know, the big question is what changed to make you rescind the offer? And then if you go into a good, decent explanation, this is why, X, Y, and Z, but we will try to rectify the situation coming together and try to see if we can't mitigate some of the circumstances that's on the north side, that's in the food desert. And when the south side says, what about me? You say, if this works, then we're going to move on to that. So there's always, I just think they have bad PR. I think you got, and I'm going to say this, you got people on the county commission that could care less about a food desert. They could, that's just their nature. They were elected fairly. And that's the prerogative. I'm sure their constituency might say, hey, as you pointed out earlier, you know, don't worry about them. You know, let them go without. You're doing the right thing. Keep.
I have heard, I don't think this is unfair, from a lot of Republicans who are pointing at Mamdani, who's, you know, running for mayor in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his policy platform items is the idea of possibly government-run grocery stores. And people have tied themselves in knots, mm-hmm. On the right, on Twitter, on this, here in Wilmington, saying, mm-hmm. this is the coming socialist disaster, and nothing could be worse than a government, not nothing, but like, this is a very bad idea that mm-hmm. the socialist left is pushing, is government-run grocery stores. You know, there's a local conservative radio host, Nick Craig, who's now online, definitely has the ear of a lot of the local Republicans, dedicated a whole show to this that was making this comparison to the Northside Food Co-op about this is terrible. The government should never be in the business of running a grocery store. And that's certainly resonating with some portion of the population who elected those people that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unfair to say that that is what they think. And there are certainly people who say this is beyond the purview of a county government. We should be doing just a couple of things and doing them well, X, Y, and Z. Setting all that aside, I think the endowment's in an interesting position because they have a very different mandate. So conservatives, when they are on the Board of Commissioners, they want to cut funding down to the state minimums for nurses, for schools, or pre-K, or whatever it is. Some people will be very unhappy with it. And some people will say, this is good fiscal governance.
Until they need it,
and then they'll be upset again. There are certainly people on the right who are applauding the efforts of, you know, Republicans, Dane Scalise and Leanne Pearce to cut that budget right now. I think there's an argument to be made for that. Again, they got fairly elected, and they'll have to get reelected, right? So there will be a reckoning at some point. But that's the county. That is county government, and there's an argument to be made. The state statute lays out what a county does. The endowment is explicitly created to help people, paraphrasing here and simplifying, but that's what it's for. So you can say it is not the government's job to build a grocery store and run it. Okay. I think you'd find plenty of people who would agree with that. But since addressing food deserts is explicitly listed as like one of the places the endowment could, you know, intervene and help people, it makes a lot more sense for them. So when people are trying to view this through a lens of like what's good conservative policy or what's good liberal policy, that's for government. I don't know what a conservative fiscal responsibility looks like on the endowment when they have to spend $85 million a year.
You've got to spend it right now, and they got to spend it by a certain time, too.
Yes.
And so right now, if you look at that money that's got to be spent, there really isn't the infrastructure to take that kind of money on right now.
I mean, that's a problem. I've heard it suggested by folks on the board, including some very conservative people, that there are key social issues like homelessness, for example. That the endowment could address working with the county and the city, and that would mean putting endowment money back into, once again, big government organizations instead of small nonprofits. But I think we're going to see some of that because I just don't know how else they're going to get $85 million.
I have my own theory.
Okay, let's hear it.
As Richard Pryor would say, do you want to hear it?
I want to hear it.
My theory is that they have money. They have this money. You got people on the county commission. And look, let me be clear about this. You've got people on the county commission and on the endowment board that are working in tandem. Now they're not doing it as part of elected officials, but the ideology and the proclivities are the same. And so, what you've got with this mass amount of money to spend, you're going to see a whole lot of organizations pop up that need money, that have those connections you afford to mention earlier. That say, hey, you know, I got an organization here. My man is over here. You know, my partner's over here. We can go before them with a good plan. They got the best grant writers because they got the money, the connections, and all of that. And so that money can go quite quickly. What those people who don't have those connections don't have is to go there and say, can we ascertain $50,000 for the homeless? You know, the city council meeting had to wrestle with this, and there's an easy way to solve that problem. I listened to Waddell and the mayor go back and forth on that issue. Oddly enough, I understand what if you're on a business, you don't want nobody doing business.
Right.
The other kind of business in front of your store.
Yeah, we're talking about Councilman Luke Waddell, who's on the board of WDI, and so I know that there are a lot of business owners who are.
I've talked to him.
Yeah, and I think there are certainly times where you'll see a piece of legislation where it's just a dreamt up problem, a solution in search of a problem, or very theatrical. And whatever you think about the ordinance, I think the pressure behind it is very real. You know, I've got good friends who work in downtown restaurants who are like, look, you know, we're operating on thin margins and we need every person who comes through that door. You know, we need every customer. And if they are feeling squeamish because there's a homeless person passed out in the doorway, you know, we could talk about why that person feels that way. And but like at the end of the day, this is hurting business and we're going to have to like lay someone off. I get where that's
coming. The endowment could help with that problem.
Well, there's the thing, right? So in any other county, in every other city in North Carolina, we might have to have a really hard conversation about what the city and county can do, right? But we've got an endowment.
We've got an endowment.
No one else has that. Right. And it's, I think to a certain extent, that has radically changed what fiscal conservatives on the city and county can say, because they can then point to the endowment and say, look, look, this is not our job because we have a $1.6 billion endowment that we made with people's money. And I'm glad, I don't care if you're left, right, or center. Anytime someone reminds the people that this is their money.
It's their money. It's people out there listening, it's your money.
It's your $1.6 billion.
That's right.
And there are temporary stewards of that money who will come and go, but your money is there, and that is yours. But that lets it just changes the conversation in such a weird way where no one else, Buncombe County can't say this because they got Dogwood, but they got to share that with like 13 other counties.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, Robeson County, Scotland County, they can't say like, oh, we'll just call the endowment.
Mecklenburg can't say it, the biggest county there.
Exactly. So I feel like the endowment probably is getting a lot of phone calls, or at least reading the room and seeing that there's an enormous amount of pressure. I wish there was more of them in the conversation. You know, like they have an intergovernmental affairs guy, Tyler Newman, who I've spoken to a couple guys, seems like a decent dude. But I wish he was in the room for a city council meeting or a county commissioner meeting where he could say, you know, can I address the board and just say, hey, that's a thing the endowment could do, or hey, that's not a thing the endowment could do, or hey, let's hold a public meeting and talk about this instead of just the two meetings that we get out of the endowment every year. It's a black box, and you've talked about this a lot. The meetings are private. We don't know what they're working on.
We don't know what they're doing with our money.
It's like, I never know. I get an email from them. I have no idea what it's going to be. It could be just recently there was almost $1 million, I think, for communities and schools to support what amounts to like PTAs for 10 lower income schools.
Mm-hmm.
Great grant. I've been hearing people ask for this for a long time. I was very happy to hear about it. Made sense. It's right a core mission of the endowment, something the community needs. But then a different day, I opened an email, and it was a $7 million grant for the aquarium. And I'm like, I like the aquarium. I like otters. They're great. But, like, it's not a core community need.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, and this is where you get that network, that good old boy network coming in, because obviously the aquarium got connections to get. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
$7 million. Whereas when you're talking about trying to fix the homeless situation, who's going to lobby for people, for the homeless?
Exactly.
Who's going to be that guy, like you said, that Brian Eccles is? Where is their Brian Eccles? Where is their advocate to go and say, hey, look, and it's going to take somebody with influence that can go before these people that's on their,
on their peer level
to say, hey, look, you know, fellas, let's, and it's usually fellas, he say, hey, fellas, let's look at these people that can get the attention, because the average, unless it's a group of citizens, now a group has power, but I don't see that. And so it's going to take that advocate, that prominent, renowned in the community to try to ascertain funds to help these problems we got.
I think of all the things that people have asked me about, there was a housing program that former Chief Donnie Williams put out there that would have helped Wilmington police officers afford homes, live in the districts that they were policing. Like, that's really the heart and soul of community policing, right? You know, you live in the neighborhood that you're an officer in. And I'd never heard anything about that after that got put out there. There's obviously the homelessness issue. There's millions and millions of dollars that you could put into various local organizations that could help. There's our schools. Our school district has $5-6 million hole in its budget right now.
They could pick up some of the pre-K that the county just cut. They didn't cut it out, but they put some cuts in it.
They had talked about it for years, but they had never, you know, really gotten it done. Democrats and Republicans had both failed to put cash on the barrelhead for it. And then we got that COVID money, and they did it. And then when the COVID money went away, they said, all right, we're not going to do it anymore. And, okay, so the endowment can do it. And you can do all that and do the big pipeline grants. I mean, the ideas are there.
Yeah.
So to your point, it's like that for me is the missing piece. It's like, you look around, you look at the founding documents, you look at the needs. I would, you know, I ask people all the time, like, what would you do? Like, oh, we'd fix affordable housing, homelessness, substance abuse, education, you know, and then they kind of like, and maybe then a nice aquarium with a petting area for the otters. You're not allowed to touch the otters. I'm kidding. But yeah, I'm a little confused, and I think you put your finger on it. I think it is just a matter of who is the advocate for these things. And this is not, I want to say, like, I don't disparage people who are advocates for things. Someone advocated for that aquarium grant. They probably really care about aquariums.
Yeah,
you know?
more than they did homeless.
More than they did homeless. And, you know, that's their thing. You know, the people who advocated for the CIS grant, great for them. You know, I'm glad they got that over the finish line. But I don't know, you put your finger on it when you said, who's going to advocate for the homeless? Like, who has the stature and the access and the time and energy to make those phone calls and work those relationships and convince people that there's a good plan there?
Yeah, and look, when you got people that are on the peer level with these guys that are on the board that can go before them and say, hey, look, they're going to listen to them. They're not going to listen to me. They're not going to listen to other people who are lesser known or who are not known. You know, they'll be nice and cordial. I've been in a room with these guys. They're nice. They're cordial. You can eat muffins and drink coffee with them, and they'll laugh. But that's it. You're not going. Yeah. But they will listen to people who maybe business partners, maybe golf buddies, maybe country club buddies with them. And they might give them attention and credence to what they're trying to do more than they would anybody else.
So we've talked about this in the past, and I'll have links on the page for people who want to go back and read this stuff. I think a lot of people who have followed the endowment know this stuff. I think I meet people who are new to the region all the time, and you have to give them the whole backstory. But this board that we're talking about, we've got six people appointed by Novant.
Mm-hmm.
That's a private process. We don't get to see that. They just pop up one day. They just arrive in an email announcement that we've got. And some of them have been good. Like, I thought Jack Bartow, former president of NHRMC, was a good pick. Knows a lot about healthcare. That's one of the four pillars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know where he stands on community-minded issues, but at least he had some expertise. All right. And the hospital appointed him. That made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm miffed. I don't know who these people are. I mean, I know who they are, but, like, I don't know how they fit into the skill set, the toolbox that the endowment's trying to build. And then we've got the county appointees, which has seemed somewhat political. Jonathan Barfield, former county commissioner, has told me, he said it out loud, that him and Rob Zappel, the Democrats on the board, were never part of that conversation.
Of course not.
And you could convincingly argue that with a Democratic majority, you know, they put a lot of Democrats on that board, and that in the future, if there was, again, a Democratic majority on the Board of Commissioners, that maybe they would elbow out their Republican colleagues when it came to appointing those people. But I think all that to say, the endowment was put together to not be political. But it's hard to ignore the politics has played some role.
Politics has played a big role because I know when Woody White and Pat Cusack, and she's not on the board anymore.
Yeah, she left shortly after it came on.
Shortly after it came on. And I will say this for Pat, she's come on the show. She's one of the few people that accepted my invitation, and she's come on the show. But these people are taking their political ideology, and they're taking, because they get on that endowment board, then all of a sudden become benevolent people. They're the same people. They're just on the board, and they can exercise their ideology when the endowment meets. And so if they're not inclined to get socially involved or have funds allocated to things that will help the community, when I say help the community, I mean things like the homelessness, things like maybe seed money for pre-K or helping out, subsidizing things that maybe the county cut, but they could put, lend a helping hand. They're not about that. If while they're on that board, they're able to bend their will to that board's actions, then it's political, because they're bringing politics, they're interjecting politics into what we don't think should be political, but it is political because they have people who were political. It was a political decision to sell that hospital. And the people who were in that decision are now sitting on the board.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. I'm going to talk about Woody White because he's kind of a boogeyman for the left. And I think people use him as a stand-in for, you know, the conservative right. And there's plenty of people who have disagreed with how he has, you know, supported policies on the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners as a trustee, at UNCW or on the board of governors of the UNC system. But I would like to believe that things would be a little different on the endowment board, and that as someone who's, you know, seems like a man of faith, someone who's told me that he cares about the community, that Woody White on that board, and people will laugh, some people who do not like Woody will laugh when they hear me say this. I would want to believe that on that board, he says, yeah, we're not talking about core government services for the county. We're talking about the endowment. And he might want to do something in the most efficient way or the most effective way, and things that are parts of his ideology. But you would hope that on that endowment board tasked with helping people, that he would say, homelessness, let's find a way to fix this out. Maybe that means Novant. Maybe that means the city and the county. And maybe it excludes some smaller nonprofits. And maybe people would have criticisms of how he did it, including me. But that he would still say, like, hey, this is part of our job. And that he might use, you know, some of his clout, and, you know, he obviously has a strong personality. And maybe he would bang some heads together and say, you know, we've been dragging our feet. Let's get our act together. Let's get this done. But we won't know. You know, we can't see those discussions going on, right? And we won't know because the board meets in secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I think.
Let me ask you this question, Brother Ben: If it's the taxpayers' board, what other entity that you have? Of course, you have your city council, your county commissioners. They meet in public, except for executive session. You got your. I was on the DSS board for 6 years.
Yep.
We met in public, except for executive sessions. I was on the mayor's juvenile council. I was on the governor's juvenile council, crime board. We met, except for executive sessions. So, this is a pub right now. It's now in 2 years. It's going to be, you know, it's going to a private, thing.
Yeah.
But right now, it is a public board. What statute says that the public cannot be present when these guys meet?
The public charity versus private foundation is an IRS designation.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to give you the simple version. Is that
please?
Because it was founded with all public money, your money, my money,
right?
And this was all money that had gone from, and a whole other podcast for a whole other time, this came from like 6 or 7 different counties. Over, I would say at least 50% of that revenue from patients came from not New Hanover County, but surrounding counties.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been locked out of the benefits of the endowment.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of people in Brunswick County and Pender County who feel that's very unfair. Different story for a different time. But because all the money was public, when it went into the bank account that created the endowment, right, it's one big public donation. So it's a public charity. The IRS doesn't care what you do for the first 5 years after you're created. And in many cases, public charities would like to stay public charities. Because public charities have more freedom over how much money they give or don't give. They could skip a whole year and then do a big gift the next year. But if you don't get public support over a certain period of time, which is 5 years, then they give you what's called the public charity test. And the foundation and the endowment is probably in the process of failing that test right now. And that means, and then they give you a second year and then test you again. And if you fail the second year, then they convert you to a private foundation. And then they say, you, because you're not getting public money anymore, you now, we got to make sure that you're really a foundation and that you're not just someone just squirreling money away, because people would try to do that. You have to give 5% of your assets every
year. Right,
And so that's required of private foundations. But that's not the same as public-private in the sense of governing board. There's different laws for that, and there's a man named Don Munford, I believe his name was. So I think he was a former state rep who went in front of the county commission as they were putting together the bylaws of the endowment, and he explained to them, in his point of view, that he didn't want, and that the commission shouldn't want, the endowment to be subject to public meeting and public records laws. He said, look, you know, I was in the General Assembly. We did all our stuff in closed doors meetings anyway. This is the way to do it. You don't want the public meddling with this stuff. I'm paraphrasing. It's not an exact quote, but that was the spirit. He was saying you don't want this to be public because then it gets partisan and it gets political, which I don't think is avoidable. So they deliberately set it up so that Novant had 6 seats on the board and the county had 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument is the further you are away from direct government control, meaning if the county appointed all the seats, that would be a public board. There'd be no way around it. But because Novant had the majority of seats, they could consider it a private. Now, this would all be up to the courts. You could still sue them and say, I'm suing for records, you know, I'm suing for emails, I'm suing for meeting minutes. And then a court would decide whether or not this actually was a public or private board. But it's set up to be private. And because, and then later, as Attorney General Josh Stein ordered them to add two more seats that are self-appointed. So there's 13 total. But still, the largest single voting...
The plurality,
yeah. Thank you. The largest single voting block on that board is appointed by Novant. And not that they always vote as a block, but the largest single group of seats comes from Novant. And that's why they don't have to meet in public, and they don't have to respond to public records requests. And they could go and change their bylaws, I think, and be more public. And I think then we would see the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I don't know how everyone would feel about that. It might be very painful to see people have public conversations about how good a local nonprofit
is. Well, it could be quite cumbersome, but the people need to realize it's still their money. So if you don't want to know how your money is spent, and if you're driving down the street and you say, why isn't this done? Why isn't that done? And you got a $6 billion with a B endowment. And you got things that could address these. And look, I'm not saying the endowment is the answer to everything. It's the end-all, cure-all, you know, just spend the endowment money and everything's cured. Absolutely not. I'm not stupid. But I do know that there are some issues that can be addressed. I do know that there are a lot of people out there doing a lot of charitable work with their own money. They're going to their own pockets to take care of things that maybe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 here could make a big difference that are getting turned down by the endowment. And I know because I see the letters that they show me, and I'm not going to mention them because in the future they might get the money, so I don't want to.
Right.
But I know that when you look at, let's take for instance, recently Woody White wrote a thing where he said he wants the search for the CEO to be local.
Yes.
Yeah. But now he's foreclosing. And look, I'm awful local. I've been saying for years, we you know, for some of these positions, local people would be. But to say that, it signals to me from past behavior and past deeds, that's just a connection for the good old boy network to do their thing.
Yeah, I think it is hard for people. I think there is a little bit of Woody derangement syndrome where Woody could be 100% right. I think some people would still say, no, I don't like it. Now I want there to be someone from outside. But I think there's a more nuanced argument that, okay, someone who's local, who? You know, and with what connections and with what independence? I think that's another issue is that, you know, CEOs, presidents, they do work at the pleasure of the board. But you want someone who, whether it's in a public or a private meeting, probably private, is going to be able to say to a board, no, I think we should do this. You know, and push back a little bit.
Well, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Let's ask Mr. Winslow how that worked out.
Right. I take your point. So here's the last thing I just want to touch on real quick. And that's because every time people have asked about this, asked, you know, whether it's a comms person or a PR firm at the chair about personalities on the board or conflicts on the board, they usually say something along the lines of, we have 13 very competent people who care about our community. And I'm sure that's true. But you've been on boards, and you know that no board, it's like a Dungeons & Dragons game. Some people have more strength than others. Some people have more charisma. Some people are surviving.
Is the word alpha personality?
Yeah.
You know, there are people who have a dominant personality. They can, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's this thing called acquiescence. We see it in national politics.
Sure, I mean, yeah.
So they come in and they have a way to dominate. I call it the De Gaulle factor because Charles De Gaulle during World War II, he was able to get France, who did nothing, to win the war.
Yeah,
part of the division. So
I have a hard time believing, not based on politics, but based on human nature, that there are 13 people who are all getting 1/13th of a say on things, right? That there aren't blocks and parties and there aren't some people who are louder and willing to go to the mat for stuff and maybe even make things uncomfortable for people because and sometimes for good reasons. People can be real mean for good reasons. You know, like I've seen people who have gone to the mat for a good thing. I believe it, right? So, but it is very hard for me to think with a straight face to say, oh yeah, sure, it's 13 people and they all just, you know, vote in a hat. Like, no way.
Of course not. Because you know why you don't believe that, Brother Ben?
Why do I not believe that?
The same reason you don't believe in the Easter Bunny. you got too much sense.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, I mean, for now, right, we've got an endowment that still meets in private and still, except for, and I will say, except for Woody White, who, whatever you think of his tweet, that was, like, one of the only pieces of information that came out of the black hole of the endowment. Even people who disagreed with it, I think, were, like, excited to learn something about the conversations that were going on in there. Other than that, it's hard to get information out of that board. It's hard to know what they're thinking. It is possible, right, that they've got like 10 beautiful, brilliant, ambitious plans, and we're both going to look like idiots in 2 weeks.
Make me look like an idiot.
They're going to build 5 co-ops and solve homelessness and fund universal pre-K, and we're just going to look like, you know, negative Nancy's, and I'll love that.
And come Tuesday morning, I'm going to be the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
All right, so unlikely. I take your point, but I mean, that's the thing, is that it is hard to evaluate what they are doing because they work in secret.
Yeah.
And I want to give them credit. They say they are working on things. I know that I've been critical of them. You've been critical of them. I think we can agree. You said it. We'd love to be wrong.
I would give, you know, if they said, look, we're going to, and that's why when I started hearing, that's why I never, you know, from the day that Mr. Winslow took that office until the day he departed, I never had a negative thing to say about him on my show or on my post, because I wanted to give him a chance. And then when I did start hearing things, and I know I reiterate this, I say that at the beginning of the show, it was positive. And I'm like, wow, man, this is okay. You know, he's coming from a different place, but what I'm hearing ain't bad.
Yeah.
And so the next thing I know, this guy's gone. So, okay, I look at the makeup of the board, and I'm saying, okay, yeah. And then what I'm hearing from people who are privy to information that the public isn't privy to, that, okay, yeah, okay, all right.
Well, I am working overtime.
I know
say.
You are.
Overtime.
Look. You know, we got about two or three Cracker Jack journalists in this town, and I've mentioned the other one before, and you one of them. And it's,
I appreciate that.
Thank you, WECT, for.
I was very grateful that they did that. Well, look, I'm like I said, I'm working overtime to continue to wrap my head around this. I'm working overtime to remain optimistic about this. You know, there's been really good work done by the endowment, and I think when you see that, that whets people's appetite.
It has so much potential.
For more, right?
Yeah, it does have so much potential. But like I said, I'm looking for that person who is going to, that we all know who's going to say, hey, let's look out for the lesser of these. Let's go to Matthew, or the book of Matthew, and say, let's do for the least of these.
Let's get it done.
Let's get it done.
All right, Derek Anderson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother Ben.
All right. Well, that's just about it for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my guest, Derek Anderson. And we'll have links on the show page to his show and some of the reporting that we talked about in this edition. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. And if you have questions, comments, or just an idea for a future show, you can email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.